Hey everyone, welcome to the Blur Girl podcast. I'm Karen Mahorn, aka the Blur Girl. Now, 2020 was a right royal mess, and there's a lot of things that should just stay there. But one thing that I was able to start that I was really happy about was the Blur Girl live show on Twitch on the OS operating system channel. Well, I always wanted to make the post available in podcast form, but I kind of got overwhelmed by how popular it got. Now, I'm finally getting around to reposting those episodes here in podcast form for those of you who might have missed them. And this interview is with the amazingly talented Orlando Jones. Now, the last time he was on the podcast was actually at the end of 2019 when he gave me the scoop about why he was fired from Starz American Gods franchise in his own words. Now, a lot has happened since then, but I was lucky enough to have him on the live show as my second guest. So this interview was originally recorded back in June of 2020, smack dab in the middle of the pandemic, and we were all still reeling from everything from the protests to what we were seeing every day play out over and over again, the violence on screen. And we talk about that. You can watch the entire video version up on YouTube, which I will link in the show notes. We talked about how he's explaining what's been going on to his little girls, how he balances his acting with his activism, and of course, how he keeps a dragon in his basement, because don't we all? So after I pay some bills, check out my interview with actor, writer, producer, and activist, Orlando Jones. Hey everyone, it's Karma here. I just want to thank you for listening to the Blur Girl podcast and for your continuing support. And I wanted to let you know that I now have a Patreon. That's right. If you are interested in supporting the Blur Girl podcast or the Blur Girl live show on Twitch or any of the other content that I bring you on a regular basis, you can now go to patreon.com/theblurgirl and support. Now, I use those funds only for Blur Girl projects, buying gear, paying for software, subscriptions, and hopefully hiring a team. And with your help, I can do all that. So please support the show at patreon.com/theblurgirl. That's THEBLERDGURL.
But what we ain't gonna do though, is we ain't gonna accept these ridiculous terms that you're talking about, where we know we're second-class citizens. Now we're supposed to shut up, be quiet, and be thankful for second-class citizenship.
What's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me tonight on the second episode of The Blurred Girl Live. My name is Karen Mahorn, aka The Blurred Girl, and I hope you all have had an amazing week and that you learned something from my very first guest, April Rain. All week, folks were asking me about how to work for her. What I promise, her company has not started yet. I will let you know when it does. But tonight's guest is going to really drop some knowledge and keep you entertained. I have been smiling like this for the past half hour hanging out with him. I am super excited to invite to the show actor, writer, producer, director, activist, and troll assassin, Orlando Jones. Welcome, Orlando.
Hi.
How you doing?
How you doing? I'm good. How you doing?
So I gotta ask, just off the top, how are you? How's the family? How are you holding up in COVID and all the crazy?
All is good. I've just, you know, my girls are amazing, so that's always fun. And, you know, I love the fact that I get to, you know, spend gobs of time with my daughters, so I got no complaints about that. Frankly, my life hasn't changed a lot because I don't ever go nowhere anyway. As you can see, I'm sitting in the dungeon.
Yeah,
with my dragon. Shut up,
dragon.
Obsidian! Obsidian, sit! Sit! I'm so sorry, guys.
So you have a dragon named Obsidian. Okay.
Yeah. He think he's so black in there, but he's
south of Westeros. Where is he?
Well, you know, he's way south. We're down in the North Carolina region. He hides out around here in the Cape Fear area. And, you know, he got capes, you know what I'm saying? And he gives fear. And a lot of people think it's named for the river, but it's not. It's named for Obsidian, my dragon.
Because dragons.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, he has a cape and he brings fear because he's been eating cows and, you know, just he'll go through here and grab, you know, dolphins, whales, just shrimp, like just having a party. Like he had Red Lobster one Sunday. Yeah, it's, you know, it's ridiculous.
Well, I hope you're safe because I don't want this to turn into like a horror film in the middle of a live show.
No, we told, you know, Obsidian, though, you know, we have a, you know, alpha type of relationship, you know what I mean? Alpha run if he blow his breath on me, and that's pretty much the way it works.
So listen, what are you relaxing with now? What are you watching besides your dragon? What are you geeking out over? Are you watching shows with the girls?
You know, they are funny. Kids love to watch some of the same things over and over again. So we have enjoyed Peabody Sherman, which we love, both the show and of course the movie and Word Girl. So Word Girl is the joint, and we had a strong Phineas and Ferb thing
Phineas
going
and
on for a
Ferb.
while. Yep, we rocked that. We've now moved, we went through Spirit like a brush fire. It was amazing. Just watching that horse run and watching Chickalinda and all those wonderful characters. We have Princess and Frogged our way recently. And then we did a swing back to the Aristocats, which was interesting. And the old 76 animated Robin Hood
Oh,
was a
wow.
big hit. Now they hate all of that. Everything I just mentioned is horrible. My youngest one wants Paw Patrol and Baby Yoda, Mandalorian. So respect. That's a 3-year-old, by the way. Yeah. She requests Mandalorian. She's 3 years old.
She's
Like,
three.
it's amazing. Yeah.
But
Yeah. I
she's
was like, you
also
are definitely.
she's also your child. So there's that.
She's my child. Yeah. I'm not mad at her. I was like, you know, you're right. You're right. I can't say nothing. Mandaborian, Daddy, like completely upset that it didn't just happen immediately, like beat it out.
Immediately.
Yeah, told you, manservant. I'm a manservant. That's how it works. And I think, and my oldest actually likes the cooking shows that make the desserts, and yeah, she
Yeah.
loves that. So Sugar Candy, Sugar Rush, we've been watching that. Of course, we went through the Land of Sugar on Wreck-It Ralph. You know, we do a lot. We do a lot with those crew. And then we have a documentary, you know, films that we'll check out occasionally, particularly those telling stories of, you know, the different lives of different, you know, indigenous children, just children around the world, just to get a clear sense of what their privilege is, up close and personal, rather than, you know, saying the word, just seeing what it's like to have to walk, you know, 7, 8 miles to get to school for real, and just what that process is.
In the past few weeks, so many people have been speaking of privilege. There's been so much discussion and about teaching people about their privilege. One of the things I was telling April when she came to visit was, okay, we're gonna for the next hour, you do not have to explain racism to white people. You are safe. But it's been really interesting. I just gotta ask, you have been you know, an activist and an entertainer and everything. You walk those paths simultaneously, but now everybody is a behind a keyboard and being a social media activist and stuff. What do you think of this newfound, not newfound Black Lives Matter, because this has been around, that's been around for a while, but this newfound interest in what we folks have been doing and saying all this time?
I mean, I guess good. I think there's just a huge difference between social activism and actual activism. So I think it's imperative that there be a plan and a clear focus. And I think that simply means go to your city council meeting, get involved in your children's school, look at what the curriculum is, look at what they're actually teaching in those institutions of higher learning and lower learning, like actually get involved is one way to do it. And then secondly, I think it's to recognize you're dealing with a community that has suffered a great deal of trauma and hasn't had anyone treat them as trauma victims. They've just been treated as criminals. So if we simply applied, you know, the care that is required to the disenfranchised communities, while at the same time helping those gifted kids get where they belong. And that means that when you recognize this aptitude in fourth and fifth and sixth grade math, which is when you would recognize the aptitude of a coder, that you now help that child get the 10,000 hours of math and the access and resources that that child needs to become a million-dollar coder. So focusing in both of those areas in our immediate communities, I believe, is a surefire way to make a change, because you've changed that life for real. You helped that kid get where he or she needed to go. And at the same token, you helped this kid get where they needed to go by helping them through their trauma. So I think in doing so, you empower real, authentic change by helping someone. And I think that's activism. I think great to tweet about and great to post about what pissed you off today, but actually empowering another life is true activism.
No, I completely agree. Although I do have to say that I am thoroughly entertained by your Twitter page. And I'm so many of us. Yes.
How dare you?
Because I feel like you show more of your activism on, although I've seen it on Twitter too, but I feel like you show more of your activism on Instagram. But all of your personalities on Twitter, like Trollando.
Yes.
And Olivia.
Twitter's a lot more fun for me.
It is. Yes. Let's roll down the list of some of your lovely personas on Twitter.
So the fun of Twitter to me is that it's a bit of a scream fest in many ways, a little bit of a scream fest. And everybody likes to scream a certain thing. And I like to scream something that you will never know what's going to come. That's the way I prefer it, because it's more entertaining for me. So sometimes I'm talking as Trollando. Mm-hmm. Trollando is a troll. He is there to troll. If you get in your feelings, it is just more entertaining to him because he told you up front that he was a troll. He's full disclosure. So if you choose to get mad at a troll, well, then you deserve everything that's coming to you. And that's Trollando. Now, I was raised by, you know, a collection of very, very strong Black women. There was not a weak one in the bunch. And because of that, they had no problem telling you what it was, what it was going to be, what it wasn't going to be, what you was and what you wasn't going to do, and what you bet not do no more. That was all laid out very clearly. And then you had what they was fixing to do or what they was finna do. If they was fixing to do it, then they was going to do a whole bunch of other stuff before they did it. But if they was finna whoop your ass, it was imminent. It was moments away from that ass whooping coming. So Olandra is my inner Black woman. And she is there to let you know. Olandra. And Olandra is here to tell you what it is going to be, boo-boo. What it ain't going to be. What it look like, put it good. And what it don't look like at all, what's the never? See, so Olandra don't want to hear that. Olivia is my inner white girl. And she just, she got a lot going on. And, you know, she doesn't understand. Everyone's so pissed off. And she's just, you know, you know, because reasons, you know. So that's Olivia, and she's always in her feelings. It doesn't matter what you say, because she's Olivia. She don't care. And then there's Sapphire, but his stage name is Dawn. So Sapphire is a drag queen, and he performs at La Escuelita. Right across from Port Authority in New York City. That's where he came from. That's his stage.
Okay, and, I'm done. I'm mad that he's on 42nd and 8th. I'm mad.
That's right. That's exactly where he is. He said, yeah, first of all, he's real with it. He ain't like these bougie drag queens, okay? There's a bottle of whiskey on the table and a real show going down. How dare you talk about Sapphire, though his real name is Dawn. So sometimes...
Dawn.
Sometimes Sapphire, whose real name is Dawn, you know, just has to let you know what time it is. And then sometimes it's Orlando Jones. Occasionally it's Orlando Jones. And then occasionally, you know, it might be Mr. Nancy sometimes just for giggles. Or Dig McCaffrey from Say It Isn't So. I drag him up a lot just because he's a paraplegic cocaine addict. And I just like the idea of talking to somebody like a paraplegic cocaine addict. And Dig McCaffrey doesn't care. And that's it. those are my go-tos. Those are my go-tos, if I'm being honest. Those are my Twitter voices. And I enjoy them. And I enjoy watching people respond to them like, what the hell is going on? It's awesome.
And it's also, I mean, and we talked about this a little bit before the show, but also sometimes, and this is something that's hard for, I think, a lot of mainstream to understand. Black folks, we laugh at a lot of our own pain. You know, we are out here dealing with, like, I know, like in 1 week I'd lost a family member to COVID, and I was also dealing with another sick friend and somebody else who'd lost a job. And then I'm turning on the news and seeing another person who died in the hands of police violence. And then we go and turn on a comedy, and people don't understand that, but we don't have therapists. We have comedy. We have comedians like you.
A lot of people do. I mean, look, I'm from the deep South. Okay. And I can tell you with great certainty that Larry the Cable Guy and Jeff Foxworthy and those guys were talking to an audience of broke people who happened to be white, who were, you know, trying to figure it out just like everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm,
And there were a bunch of black comedians that were talking about, you know, what it was like from that side of the camp. You know, everybody from Mom's Baby, the true raw pioneer genius that she was, to the people she spawned like Red Fox and Richard Pryor. But that came from Moms, let's not get it twisted. And her political comedy and her in some ways birthing and spawning even Dick Gregory was to show you how prolific she was as a comedian and that she could do so many different styles and types of comedy. But mm-hmm. when I look at those storytellers, the Nina Simones, the James Baldwins, which were the people who I was inspired by, then there are lots of colors within the way they live their lives as artists. So I really try and do that. It would be boring if I had to be the same Orlando all the time. So I enjoy all of them. And I'm sure some people like some more than others, and that's fine. That's their prerogative. But it's what I enjoy doing is bringing different characters to life.
And you're obviously amazing at it because you've had so many incredible, incredible roles. And actually, I also want to ask you about that because I think I noticed this most on Sleepy Hollow, but you've done it obviously in other shows. You have an incredible connection to your fans in terms of your social media. You speak out on things that a lot of your colleagues might not feel comfortable speaking out on.
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
But your fans always bolster you. And I think it's a balance there. How do you keep that balance?
People think in such polarizing terms. They think that Black Lives Matter is a political statement. Some people do. For me, that's not a political statement. But I also think it's important to advocate, if you're going to advocate for human rights, to certainly advocate for yourself, but also to advocate on behalf of others whose experience you don't know, but who you clearly recognize is receiving the same second-class citizenship type treatment. So I really think about that and who I'm trying to advocate for online. I even think about that in terms of the fandoms that I tend to like to join. I like the ones of the groups who are often the most disenfranchised, the people who people hate for no apparent reason other than they don't like what they think. So I like that. I think talking about that is important for me as an artist, because I never want anybody to get confused about you know, what it's about for me. It's not about Black Lives Matter, certainly, but it's about equitable treatment for me. And I mean that for everybody, not just somebody who's Black. Equitable treatment for somebody who's white is equally as important at the end of the day. You know, no one's trying to take that away, but since that's so freely given, you know, it's amazing how sensitive people are. So,
well, yeah.
I look at all those elements and I go, and if that's what's going to make you sensitive, if my honesty as an artist is what's going to make you uncomfortable, then man, I'm probably not the type of artist you're going to like. You know, and that's your prerogative, like, you know, but the truth of the matter is, it depends on how you're engaging me. I mean, if you're engaging me as an actor, I've played all types of characters who hold completely different belief systems from myself. Mm-hmm. I play characters who fundamentally disagree with everything that I think and believe in, and people might love that character and can't stand me. So for me, that's also, a lot of times they're interacting with me, but they don't know who they're talking to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So, and so for me, it's a bit of a cheat, right? I've been over here playing these games this whole time, being these other people, and now you're trying to interact with me based on this little sliver right here. And so I guess for me on social media, that's what I try not to do. And that's why that's the balance that I exercise. I'm not trying to impress anybody or not impress anybody. I'm just trying to put forth a balanced view of the way I would like to be represented. And so I'm trying to talk about Brazil. I'm trying to talk about China. I'm trying to talk about Muslims. I'm talking about, you know, LGBTQ, you know, S2+, but I'm not talking about them like they're letters. Like, you know, I have a gay character I do. I have a lesbian character I do. I have a two-spake character I do. I see them as three-dimensional people who have experienced something, and I know that experience not well. It's something that's been taught to me and shared with me through other artists. And those artists opened up my mind to things that discrimination of a kind that I'd never even previously seen. And that was transformative for me because I saw it through the eyes of being a hunted Black man. I didn't see it through the eyes of what a vulnerable indigenous woman. Right. And so I really look at my social media in those terms and try and talk about what my heritage is. And that's really what it is. I'm Native American, I'm Chinese, and I'm Black. And I try and talk about all those aspects of who I am and those people of my family who represent all those other things, but who are people who I love dearly. And I just try and advocate the way I would want other people to advocate for somebody who you might not think is a nice person because they're a this or they're a that, but that's not how I know them. I know them in a different way. So I'm going to try and advocate as best I can how they probably should advocate, but sadly they too bigoted to do it. So I'm going to stand up for my people and I'm going to get them to sit down. I don't want nothing to happen to them. I'm sure you got your people, and let's find a path forward that doesn't cause harm to each other and doesn't, you know, demonize people. And I think that's critically important as we move forward. But by the same token, it's critically important that we get equitable treatment, and we've stood still long enough, so y'all gonna have to take this screaming and this yelling right now, and y'all, we gonna work and do together. We're gonna do right together. And it's gonna be fine. But what we ain't gonna do though is we ain't gonna accept these ridiculous terms that you're talking about. Where we know we're second class citizens. Now we're supposed to shut up, be quiet, and be thankful for second class citizenship. Now I appreciate the offer, but no, thank
listen.
You. I tried it out.
Listen,
I knocked the tires for 400 years.
You better say so. Now, the last time you were here, I had to bring, you saw me, I had to break up my fan. Last time you were not here. I know I did. Every now and then. Hallelujah. The last time we spoke, not the last time you were here, you were on the podcast and you talked about what you went through on American Gods and how you left that show. And we're not going to talk about all that right now. Y'all can go back and listen to the podcast and get that whole story. But you were shining a light on some of the more of the ridiculous things that had happened behind the scenes, namely American Gods parent company, Fremantle, that we found out is also the parent company for Gabrielle Union, who was fired from America's Got Talent, which was also the parent company for Michaela Cole's chewing gum. And now what we have here, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call a pattern. In the things that came out since then, and the fact that so many actors came together for you, for Gabrielle, for Michaela, and other people, and felt the strength to talk about some of the injustices that were happening in Hollywood, do you think a change was made? And I'm not even talking about American Gods. I'm talking about like Hollywood as a whole. Or do you think it took what we're seeing now? All of these people shining a light on all of the things that they've gone through in Hollywood right now for changes to be made. Do you think you helped start that, or you just going to be here to help finish it?
I think that's for somebody else to say. I don't know that I feel comfortable saying that I was the start of that movement, but I'll say this. I think what Viola Davis has said is something that needed to be said. And I think that Nicole Beharie finally having the courage to come forth and say some of the things that she finally was able to say, and the incredible growth that she went through as a human and as an artist to not come forth until she could speak in a way that wasn't out of anger. That's a really powerful thing. And I don't want to diminish the power of those type of acts. I think those type of acts are transformative. And I wish that there was more attention being paid to those little nuanced nuggets that are coming forth as we talk about these larger issues. Ultimately, this is hopefully a period of tremendous change. That's certainly my hope. I think right now, I think people are scared. White people are just scared right now. You know, they are, for the first time, coming face to face with the reality that they previously didn't know. And that is, they thought they knew what racism was, and they thought they had a handle on it. And they've never experienced it, but they thought that by hearing about it, they could understand it. And that, you know, it's ridiculous. And that's not to demonize white people at all. I mean, men don't understand what it's like to be women. You know, so we all have many blind spots about the things that we think we understand intellectually, but we don't understand because we just can't see it through the eyes of someone who's lived it. We don't have that granular knowledge, that you know, institutional knowledge. And I think it's gonna be a process to educate this institution. They're aware of their bigotry, but they don't know what to do. They're scared. And then there's another contingent of them that are frankly just white supremacists and believe that diversity and multiculturalism are anti-white and that they're entitled to this and that their forefathers built this thing. And, you know, Abraham Lincoln gypped them because he never freed those Dagon slaves. So there's a whole another group of people who have, you know, finally a representative in the White House who's literally repeating their battle cry. That's their rhetoric to a T. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's dead in sync with the alt-right and the neo-Confederates. So white supremacy has a very powerful voice, and it has one. And those powerful voices have aligned themselves in a very specific network, and that network isn't new. And we are attempting to dismantle that network. And that's why I say you have to go in your local community to do that, because that's where that network is built from. It's granular. But by the same token, to pretend that this moment isn't an opportunity would be, I think, stupid. And I think to look at it as purely negative is a fundamental mistake. I think it is painful for all sides, as it has been. And I think it would be great if the New York police chiefs of the world who are complaining about people treating them unfairly for 30 days, you poor things, could have the empathy and also just could have the empathy to understand how ludicrous what they're saying is, and that we could remove those individuals and replace them with someone who does understand that, because that person will help the community. See, in that person's ideology, he's also telling you what his value system is for the community. So he's telling you that your trauma and your problems don't matter. It's part of his belief system. That's his worldview. Mm-hmm. You can't just leave that person there. You have to remove that person and the people who supported that person and put in place someone who sees everyone as human. Doesn't see you less because you're a female or because you're fat or because your palms sweat or because your hairline is weird or because you're not what people call traditionally attractive, whatever the reason they're going to discriminate against you for. You shouldn't be able to do that. And so that for me is really all it's about at the end of the day. And my hope is that this moment pushes that forward. And I believe that that will happen simply because the only reason it wouldn't happen is because we were so apathetic, we fucking gave up.
So I gotta ask, I'm going back to acting now. I've gotta ask, what do you think to date now your favorite role has been to play when you look back?
For me?
Yeah.
Wow. God, I don't know how to categorize them like that. I wish. This is going to sound crazy. I see them as such a different thing than that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I see them as a friend, right? Mm-hmm. and I got this friend, and he looks like this, and he talks like this, and he walks like this, and he's got this kind of crazy story that goes along with him, and he spent too much time in the sun, and he got his skin two-toned like this. I mean, I really, for me, it's all of that. It's all of that little stuff that you do on the day-to-day that make you who you are. And so I kind of enjoy that a lot because it really helps me bring the character to life. And so each one of them for me and what I was doing was awesome that I got the opportunity to do it and to have this crew of people who worked with me and I worked with them and we all, you know, got it on camera, right? And whether it came out exactly as I wanted or it didn't come out exactly as I wanted, it doesn't much stop the process. It's kind of the same, right? Mm-hmm. For me. So it's hard for me to, I don't know how to pull them apart. I mean, like I like people like Nancy, but there's guys I liked, you know, like I liked the Reverend Lamont Fatback from Mad TV. I liked him. he was so ridiculous to me.
Amazing.
It was crazy. Another one I liked from Mad TV was I really liked the prison warden in the Barbra Streisand, Whitney Houston, like Terms of Endearment movie. I really like that guy. Completely back. he was involved and in love with all the inmates and whatnot. It did. He was all in his feet. Put it this way. He was a mess. This is what I thought was horrible about him. What was horrible about him is he was an absolutely toxic human who was using his power to create very unbalanced relationships in the prison system as the warden, right? Mm-hmm. But in his mind, he was in the soap opera Knots Landing. And that in his mind, that's what was going on. So the way he dressed, the way he spoke, everything he did was like he was a Knots Landing character.
Exactly.
It was all this pain that was happening to him the whole time. Such a victim. And Nicole Sullivan, who was on the show with me, used to have a joke, and we could never get it on camera, but it was the funniest thing about that entire character. And that was, I would say, Maybelle, and she'd scream, "I am not a whore!" And I'd say, "But Maybelle, I am not a whore! I'm sorry, Maybelle, I am not a whore!" And she would yell that until we cowered in the corner and cried. And that was the bit. And we would do that bit and the crew would be like, look at these fools. We do that like 3-4 times a day sometimes.
Just oh, no.
So she could yell. Oh, no, absolutely. I'd ask her a question and she'd start yelling, I am not a whore. And the bit is, it goes on as long as she wants to scream, I am not a whore. I'm not in control of it. My job is to cower.
That's just keep going.
I keep playing along until Nicole Sullivan gets tired of screaming, I am not a whore. Which generally happened because Deborah Wilson decided, I'm tired of this white girl screaming, I am not a whore. And Deborah Wilson shut that shit down. And that was my home girl. So I would be like, Deborah, help me. And she would like be like, bitch, you got 3 more I am not a whore before I come over there. And Mary Shear would scream, you can second that emotion. And the next thing you knew, it was all around the camp. And we were a motley crew. And then Arlie Lang said something hilarious. And that was it. So I think all of those things and all those characters for all those different periods in my life that were just insane.
So if there was one movie or show that you could do over, that you could bring back and do a remake of, what would it be?
I would bring back Evolution, because if I didn't, I think the fans would kill me. And, you know, it's funny. I just had, David was just on my podcast, and he's such a sweet dude, man. I really like David. But, you know, when everything got crazy, you know, people were coming at David, you know. And David is not – no. David Duchovny's not a racist dude. You know what I mean? It's not his – he's not – that's not the place he's coming from. You know what I'm saying? So his daughter was going to protest, and he was like, listen, Corona's out there, but it's important for you to stand up for something and not be the failure that I have been in not being more vocal and standing up myself. Right? So I'm like, okay, you know, respect. I wouldn't let my daughter go out there with you crazy, but okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's my dude. But, I hear where he's coming from, and I get where he's coming from. And he was one of the people that really supported me on the Mike Adams thing. Because David's a smart dude, and you know, he was like, you know, educating young minds. Yes, that's not freedom of speech. That's weaponizing freedom of speech. So
exactly,
I really feel like us taking those characters as who we are today, as opposed to who we are then, and having something attack the earth that is way above our pay grade. While those two grown-ass men are still the children they were then. Maybe a little bit grown up, but not really. Not really.
No, but it would be amazing, though, because your characters could be like, fun. Nah, see, we've done this before. We remember what happened last time. Like, it would be funny if it was
not only did I go, I was in an alien asshole, and a little alien got pulled out of my asshole. So let me be very clear. I'm not trying to relive either one of my It's okay. Just the performing of getting an alien yanked out of my asshole was exhausting. Okay. I think I asked for ice cream for my ass at the end of it. Okay. It didn't matter what flavor it was because it was for my ass. And I'm just saying, you know, I went through a lot of trauma in that movie. Okay. I sang the birds, tookie tookie, the call, all that. Okay. Okay, I begged people not to tell anybody where I had been. Okay, I went through a lot in that movie. Okay, so I would like to see less alien assholes the next time around. Okay, maybe. can David go investigate all the alien assholes? That's what I would like the movie to be. And I'm like, now let him get sucked up all in the assholes. And I'm like, yes! now you know what it feels like, motherfucker. So that's a great plot right there. Now the white dudes get sucked in the alien asses, and it'd be lovely.
And the black dude lives.
Please. I seen this. Listen, I made that joke 20 years ago just to have people explain the joke I made to me. How does that work? The joke was, I seen this movie, the black guy dies first. And then people would be interviewing me going, you know, in Jurassic Park, the black guy dies first. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that happening? What? I'm sorry, what? No, I'm saying the black guy dies first, like in horror movies. You know, he's always dying first. Like, what's that like? Yeah, I mean, like, well, obviously, I'm sure you have something, you know, to share about it. Yeah.
It's hysterical.
I direct your attention to this movie called Evolution.
Evolution.
I direct your attention to this following line. I seen this movie. The black guy dies first. You snag it. I'm pretty sure that's what I said. It was 19, two, year 2000, maybe. I think it was 2000. It's 2016.
20.
What the fuck are you talking about right now? And you might want to consider whose joke you are referencing.
See, that's what one of my questions should have been. What's the dumbest question that you've ever been asked? Okay, but I have people in the chat that are like losing it. So I'm taking questions from the chat now. And oh my God, they're all yelling. There's people in here yelling lines from the movie. It's in me. It's in me. That's hysterical.
That's right. Exactly. Then now y'all see, this is why. Because here's the thing. I really mean this in all sincerity. Like, one of the great joys of my life that I never, ever in a million years saw coming is that as an adult, I would be walking down the street and encounter so many people who are so excited to see me because of, you know, some project I did, right? And there is always such Evolution fans are the nicest human beings I've ever, like, y'all, they're nice. Like, I want to do it just because of how awesome the fans of that movie have been. Like, it's crazy to me how nice they are. So nurses run up to me with, and I signed KY tubes to say there's always time for lubricant. I can't tell you how much KY I have signed. KY literally sent me a gift basket of like every type of lube. I had to get rid of it.
KY jelly. KY Jelly sent you a big box.
I told them, they sent something to me and I responded with a GIF that said, it's always time for lubricant. They sent me a DM and said, can we please send you lubricant? They sent so much lubricant. I look like I had taken anal to a whole new level is what it looked like. Okay. I had every kind, and like 18 different types of anal lube. Okay, the housekeeper walk around looking at you funny. I see your lube, Mr. Jones.
I'm done.
My girl,
I'm done.
This is my girl, yo, that's my girl too. My girl Angelica. My girl Angelica is my homie, yo. Angelica literally and like she'll tell me. It's like we don't have that type of thing where she gotta act like she invisible, you know what I'm saying? My grandmother and, you know, they were housekeepers. So, you know what I mean? I don't play that second class citizenship foolishness. So she say anything she want to say. So she saw, I left it in the wrapping, right? So she saw it in the wrapping. She said, you're going to lose all of that? She goes, are you going to use all of that? And before she left, I put it in her car.
No, you didn't. The whole... So Angelica went home with a big box of lube and had to explain to her family.
She had to explain to her family. Soon as she looked at me and she was like, are you going to lose all of that? I said it right in her car.
So question from the fans. I got to know, does Orlando mess with anime? And if so, which ones? Do you watch anime? Are you a fan of any anime?
Yeah, you know, I went down a really... You know, I went down to Ash versus the Evil Dead. You know, I went down that rabbit hole for a while and came out of it. And you know where I really find that I really like anime? It's going to sound crazy. On Wattpad. I really like reading it on Wattpad.
Oh, so like manga. Okay.
Yeah, manga. It's really, I enjoy that. And I really enjoy tracking the artists, the tracking the art. It's like a completely different language from the anime itself, right? Because because of how each artist renders. Anyway, so I do. And if you have stuff you think I should totally check out, like please send me stuff because I'm looking, I'm really looking for more. I'm, the person who turned me on to it was Ernest Dickerson, the cinematographer. He and I were really into, he was a director and he was directing me in a project. And we started talking about all of the crazy Japanese movies, you know, Kung Fu Hustle back in the day, and Ichi the Killer, The Audition, and all those types of movies. And then we got into a crazy anime discussion, and I've been like a fan ever since. So. Yeah, that's okay, so anime.
We got to get you some, we got to get you some Akira. We got to get you some Ghost in the Shell. We're going to hook you up.
Please give me some Akira. Hook me up. Please hook me up. Thank you.
So somebody said, am I the only one who wants to know the behind the scenes for Drumline? I would love to hear some tea about behind the scenes on that. Now, I know one story, so you should share it because you turned down a role.
No, you tell.
Drumline. No, oh, you turned one. Down that a role. To, yes. You turned down a role to take Drumline.
So at the time, they were trying to get me to do a movie called Like Mike, which is a magic tennis shoe movie with Bow Wow and Morris Chestnut. And I thought Morris Chestnut was fantastic in the movie. Shout out to my dude, Morris Chestnut. But I just, I couldn't understand that versus bringing together show style marching bands. I mean, there was no comparison to me. I mean, I grew up, you know, and my parents went to traditional black colleges in the South. Like, that's just where I'm from. So I was like, I'm doing this. Y'all are crazy. The best tea on that movie is probably, I got, gosh, what? It snowed that summer. And it was crazy to be shooting in the snow in Atlanta. And the craziest part of that movie is who really won the Battle of the Bands for real on the field. And the participants were, there are a lot of people who didn't like participate because Florida A&M got an A feeling, so they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So it was Clark, Morris Brown, Bethune-Cookman, and the Atlanta A&T band. And the Atlanta A&T band was made up of a high school band that was led by a former Rattler. That was the Southwest DeKalb High School Band. And the Drumline was a mishmash of college students and high school. So the point is that, but the most ridiculous band was Southwest DeKalb and Clark. And the Southwest DeKalb High School Band was bigger than the Clark University Band. Clark had 91 people and they outblew bands of 250.
Damn.
And it was crazy to actually hear that, like to just sit and because I would, that's what all the conducting scenes were, because I, you know, you actually had to actually conduct them. So I spent all of my time conducting those bands while Nick learned to play the drums. And that was the most fun part of that movie, was I got to really to do that and to, you know, to really sort of, you know, write the arrangements. And, you know, I've been a musician for time. So that's why I did the movie, because I got to go back to being a musician. So it was really fun.
Somebody else is asking, did you write the O.J. Simpson blooper speech from Mad TV?
Yes.
I forgot about that. It was your scene. I figured you did. The short answer
bloopers
to that,
and blunders.
Sir, yes.
I didn't.
Wow. How much of how much of Clifford Franklin from The Replacements was improv?
It was, 60-40. I mean, I wouldn't say it was improv. I mean, I've been in the Writers Guild for 25 years. I knew who I wanted Clifford Franklin to be, and that wasn't in the script. So as soon as he got off the box, when Clifford Franklin shows up as a replacement player, if you watch the movie, he doesn't have luggage. He has a box with twine wrapped around it. That's his luggage. and he did that because, you know, I went to school in Charleston, South Carolina, and I had a friend named Tyrone Geddes. And Tyrone Geddes traveled with a box with twine wrapped around it. That's how he traveled. He was a mechanic, and that's how he traveled. So For me, that was Tyrone Geddes got a shot to go to the NFL. And he starts off with not even having luggage. And they win a couple of games. And he wearing sunglasses and talking about himself in the third person.
Oh, my God.
Suddenly, he's Karl Malone. The thing about Clifford Franklin.
I was about to say.
Clifford Franklin.
Yes, yes. But,
so that wasn't in the script. So I had to write all of, you know, what that was. So, you know, I was writing Clifford Franklin.
I'll never look at Twine the same again. is there a role out there, or a story, I should say? Is there a story out there that you would love to tell, even if you weren't able to write it? If somebody came to you and said, "We're doing a movie about this," is there a character or a person out there who you'd love to play?
James Baldwin.
Oh my God. You'd be amazing.
James Baldwin, Ted Patrick, the father of cult deprogramming, Ted Patrick, black guy, still alive, lives in San Diego, was literally grabbing kids who had been snatched by a cult, grabbing them with a blanket, jumping into a two-door car, driving off, and staying in a room with them 16, 17, 18 hours until he deprogrammed it. He started off with his own child. He's deprogrammed over 2,000 people, and he tried to contact multiple sitting presidents, including Obama, to explain to them that ISIS and ISIL were cults and that you couldn't bomb those people to death because they've been indoctrinated into mind control and they had to be deprogrammed, and there was no system to do deprogramming. That guy's story, amazing. Kurt Flood, the black man who created Free Agency to create all these athletes who are multimillionaires, that happened because of Kurt Flood and his legal case, which created free agency in professional sports. Those three, yesterday.
Oh, my God. Somebody write the James Baldwin now while I research the rest. Because all we need to give you is a cigarette and a suit. You already don't care. It would be perfect. Oh, that's amazing.
I got a phone call from a director, an extremely talented black female director, telling me to start writing that yesterday.
Yes, absolutely.
I am on the case.
That is amazing.
I am on the case.
And I'm gonna send you some anime to watch, but I'm gonna explain one show for you because I wanna hear your idea of this. There is a show that is very popular right now called My Hero Academia. I am also a fan. Think of it as if the X-Men, if Charles' school, his gifted school, was just a public school, and it was a public school for kids that had special gifts. Those gifts weren't called mutants, they were mutations, they were called quirks. So everybody in this world is born with a quirk. But not everybody's quirk can make them a superhero. Your quirk might be that you can move clouds. That's not helpful. You just happen to have it. But these kids who go to UA High are being trained for superhero, basically, classification. So if you could pick any quirk, and I'm telling you, these kids have everything. Some people can talk to animals. Some people can stick to walls. One guy can bake. That's his quirk. If you could have one special superpower, one special quirk, what would it be?
I like the one I have. I'm going to stay grateful for the one I have.
Okay, which one you have?
I'm the storyteller.
Okay, great.
That's my quirk.
Take it.
I like telling stories. I like them to be rooted in truth and from hopefully a perspective that you maybe previously been considered and outlandish and funny and ridiculous. But I like telling stories, and that I'm gonna be grateful for the one I got because I love that story simply because that metaphor is a powerful one that we all have a superpower. We all have that quirk, that thing that we do. And not only the discovery of that, but having a tribe of people around us to help us be able to do that as a way of life and support ourselves so that we, you know, can hopefully be doing the things that we love as we, you know, make a living is that's a beautiful thing. That's not work. So I feel like I get to live that. So that's a special gift and a good quirk.
Okay, so I'll give this one to you. Your superpower is that you are actually a Nancy and we are actually your tribe.
That's my superpower? All right.
You're Nancy, you're a storyteller and you make those changes and your stories and even the stories that you've told tonight have even no matter whatever happened on that show, you literally made history with the few scenes you were in through the speeches that you gave, one of which you wrote. So you will ever forever be in history And
thank you.
And we are so incredibly proud that you were on it. But I want to thank you for being the second guest on the Blur Girl Live and hanging out with me and in your dungeon with your dragon, your incredibly well-behaved dragon.
First of all, he's not well-behaved. I just didn't say anything. Don't you look at me. Don't you dare blow your hot fucking breath on me. I wish a dragon would. I'm so sorry. What he likes to do is, and this happened several times, if you saw me adjusting my hat, it's because he was over here blowing his hot fucking breath on me, okay? And, you know, and fine, you know what? If you ever been to a laundromat during the winter, like in Cleveland, and then it's so cold outside that you go stand next to the dryer exhaust, it's blowing out all the, and even though chlamydia, herpes, and syphilis are blowing through that dryer vent, you still stand there because it keeps you warm. Okay, that's what it feels like. I don't know what Obsidian ate, but I can smell that he ate something rank in his breath because he doesn't floss, because dragons don't floss. And that's a problem people don't talk about, that they really don't. I told you 3 fucking times, don't. So sorry.
Thank you so much, Orlando. It is always a pleasure talking to you, and you always make me laugh. I have like endorphins for days after our conversations.
Life's too short. Folks, I feel the same, sis. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Folks, thank you so much for checking out the Blur Girl Live. Please follow Orlando. Give him your anime suggestions at The Orlando Jones on Twitter. You can always find me, Karma, the Blur Girl, TheBlerGurl, Twitter, Instagram, and all over the interwebs. And thank you so much for joining me. I will see you next week. Hey folks, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoy these reposts. And if you would like to see this episode in video form, I have put the link to the video in my YouTube channel in the show notes. All of the first season is now live, and this episode happens to also be closed captioned. As always, please follow me across social media. I'm the Blurred Girl everywhere. And don't forget to check out my Patreon at patreon.com/theblurredgirl. See you next time.